Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So David Law's just taken a most enormous swig of his 55% alcohol glass of whiskey that he's drinking for tonight's podcast. How are you feeling, David?
I've just downed it. I'm going to have my next one now. This one's going to be my 25-year-old Aaron from my sister's whiskey shop. Can't wait.
What percentage is that?
It doesn't say. I mean, it must be strong if it doesn't even say.
One of the questions on my one of the submitted questions on my Instagram.com Q&A this evening, which I elected not to answer. Although it was in my list of potential ones to answer, I just happened not to. Was who drinks the most alcohol out of you, Matt and David?
Well, that's kind of, there's kind of like a dog years element to that, isn't there? Because the amount I drink versus the amount you drink in terms of the effects it has on us is massively multiplied in me.
Yes, I decided I would probably say me because Matt lives with his parents, which isn't necessarily party vibes, booze up wise. Although as we speak, David is pouring himself another whiskey. I did an Instagram.com Q&A. That was fun, and some tennis happened today, and we have our semi finalists. It feels like that's sort of just happened, that we're at the last four stage. I mean, obviously it hasn't. We've been doing this for 11 days, but it kind of feels suddenly like we're at the very sharp end of the tournament somehow.
That is actually what makes you remember that this is a Grand Slam, because that always happens at every Grand Slam, doesn't it? The first few days with so many matches to follow and your eyes are everywhere and your days are extremely long. They feel like they're going on forever, and then you get halfway and you think, well, there's still another 9 days to go or whatever. And then the next thing you know, there's only 4 days left, which is where we are right now. And that comes up on you very quickly. And here we are. Yeah, I mean, we've got 4 days. We've got just semifinals and finals to go. And I'm really enjoying the tournament. I've enjoyed loads of the matches, and there is a lot still that really whets my appetite.
It's been so long since I've been consumed by how weird it all is. I'm now anxious about next week when there won't be any Grand Slam tennis happening. It feels like I've lived in a universe of Grand Slam tennis for so long now. Obviously there were the 2 weeks in between the US Open and the French, but even then, I mean, that was just a recovery time with the promise of the French around the corner. And yeah, suddenly we're going to be descended, plunged back into the bad old days of a few months ago on Monday. And yeah,
we've had five slams this year. In terms of, when you think of the dailies at the relived shows that we did as well. We'll think of something, Catherine.
I think the point is that it really feels like how you should feel when you're reaching the business end of a slam. And it's really pleasing that it feels that way.
Yeah, I agree. Pumped. Matt, you pumped?
I am pumped. I'm slightly concerned about just how down Catherine was just there. That was a thought I hadn't processed yet, but you're right. It does feel like that. And I'm now also concerned about next week. But, you know, four more days. Today was slightly
weird. We'll have each other, and David's got a secret source of whiskey, so we'll be fine.
I've got my sister's got her own shop. I mean, how good's that? I mean, admittedly, you do have to pay for it usually, but I seem to have got these ones free. Yeah, the 25-year-olds recommend that. Lovely.
The what?
The 25-year-old whiskey that I'm drinking, right. Aaron. Yeah.
The tennis, Matt. Talk about tennis. What happened today? How did you find it?
Well, I think we've been so used in the last few days to some really great days. Today was slightly less good, I would say, overall. I mean, the first three matches, I think, combined took about as long as the Team Schwartzman match did yesterday. So it's just a very different pace to the day. But what I would say is that all the winners were probably the ones we would have expected to win, just about. They're probably the favourites, and they've set up two very exciting semi-finals have come from these matches. So as much as today didn't always hold my interest for the entire day in terms of the competitiveness of the matches, I think they've set us up for a couple of very, very exciting semi-finals.
Yeah, today felt like a bit of a down payment, didn't it, on days to come? Not that it wasn't, you know, there were some peaks to it. Absolutely, it was fine. It was still watching tennis all day and now talking about it. But yeah, it did feel like an investment in the days to come.
Catherine, you still haven't got over your crushing disappointment from the Kenin versus Collins match that you spent the whole night thinking about. And for the first hour and a bit, nobody made a peep, did they?
Yeah, it was the ultimate damp squib. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, when they came out onto the court, my colleague Russell Fuller caught a sight of them. He's there in Paris, and he caught a sight of Kenin and Collins fist bumping just before they went out onto the court, which I told Catherine about, and we thought that's a great image. You know, it's one of those sort of, right, let's, you know, good sportsmanship, but let's throw down now. And that's what we were waiting for. And the tennis was quite good. I mean, I thought Collins came out hitting the ball well, playing pretty well. Then Kenin really stepped and played exceptionally well and won that first set. But Collins didn't make a sound. And that was all the way through most of the second set as well. And then suddenly at the end of the second set, when she most needed it, she burst into life and she let rip. Everything we'd been waiting for in terms of the come-ons. But by that time, Catherine was in a sort of stupor.
I'd already asked for my money back at that point, David. Yeah. The ship had sailed.
You were so down in the dumps.
I really was down about it, yeah. I just hadn't foreseen that as one of the potential scenarios. I thought maybe one of them might subdue the other, or one of them would get irritated with the other. I don't know. I didn't foresee any scenario where there would be kind of silence and lack of intensity, which is really what it felt like. And I now wonder if whatever injury Daniel Collins had treatment for off court was a quite significant contributing factor to that all along, although it wasn't confirmed until the end of that second set. Now, with the benefit of hindsight about that injury, I wonder if it was quite significant throughout, and in particular maybe on her mind, because she really didn't seem to be thinking clearly out there. It was like her brain was scrambled, all of her decision making was off and off kilter. Yeah, it was quite, as you say, David, she seemed to be hitting the ball cleanly enough. It was like something wasn't quite right in her mind, and definitely as the match wore on, she was struggling with her movement, and Kenin was ruthless in exploiting that and, you know, moved through the gears as the match went on. She's doing that Grand Slam champion thing of getting out the gears when they're required, both in the micro sense within the match and in the macro sense within the tournament and within the season. This is the same player that lost Love and Love to Azarenka 2 weeks ago. And here she is peaking at exactly the right time. It's so impressive.
Yeah, she's played 5 matches in this tournament. 4 of them have been 3-setters. And she's won those third set by a increasingly comfortable margin each time. It's been 6-3, 6-2, 6-1, 6-love, which just perfectly illustrates, I think, the fact that she's getting better and better and stronger as this tournament has gone on. I thought she played a very good match from the start today. I thought it was the best she played for a complete match. She's really reined in the unforced errors that were a big part of her game at the start of this tournament, and those shots are landing in now. She's striking the ball with way more conviction than she was at the start. She's got a brilliantly disguised backhand drop shot, which she seems to be using more and more. And she did to Collins's second serve in that final set when Collins was hampered by that injury quite clearly. She did to it exactly what she did to Fiona Ferro's and just took control of the rally straight away and imposed herself. And I think she's looking really, really good and match tough and not quite at the level she was at in Australia, but I don't know whether she's going to need to be to win this tournament. I think she's going to be able to manage her level kind of about a match by match basis. And so far she's been doing enough to win each match. And I don't know, I think she's looking very, very good to me. And she's got her confidence back a little bit. She was shrouded in doubt at the start of this tournament, unsurprisingly, as you said, coming in off the back of a Love and Love defeat, but she's just built the pieces back up, I think, and seems to be in a good place.
Simon Briggs texted me at 1:47 p.m. So I think that would have been late stages of the second set, saying, "I missed the early stages. Sounds like a disappointing lack of aggro so far." And I replied immediately, "Total dud, gutted."
Simon Briggs has been hanging around us too much. We've rubbed off.
Really was gutted.
You were. I mean, we couldn't get anything out of you for about an hour.
I was really pumped for it. I'd sort of base my day around it. And
when Collins finally unleashed, Catherine suddenly had gone missing.
There was silence. Like,
I'm having to sort of, I'm sort of searching out the clip in order to send to Catherine to make sure she realises this has happened.
By the time I was sort of going to react to it, it was already kind of gone. The moment was lost.
There was apparently a moment where she told her boyfriend to change seat. I think funny. I missed that bit, but what happened there, David?
I thought she told Almagro to change seats.
No, I think it was the boy. I don't think she spoke to Almagro like that. She just looks at him. She says, move. And there's like silence. She doesn't know who she's saying it to him. She goes, "You're distracting me." "Well, I'm telling you, you're distracting me. So go on, move." and he did. So that was that. Kenin, what is it? 6-love final set. She played really, really well. I do think that injury would have been part of it. But I also, the one other thing that did occur to me is you do find sometimes when somebody with a big personality plays somebody else with a big personality, it doesn't always mean that you're going to get fireworks. Sometimes you get them almost inhibiting each other. Remember when Corentin Moutet played against Dan Evans, and there was this slightly weird understanding that they knew each other was a little bit like themselves, and it wasn't quite what you expect it'll be.
But that was great fun.
But I still don't. I still think it was slightly.
I think you
unusual,
maybe need a foil rather than
a feel.
A kind of aggro rival.
If you get you need a funny man and a
straight man. Turns out that's true. Yeah, I'll remember that for future when I'm getting pumped about matches that are going to be disappointing.
Mind you, contrast of stars-wise, I do think the semi-final now could end up being a really good one with Kenin.
Kenin and Kvitova?
Yeah, I think that could be a corker.
Is it that big a contrast of styles? I mean, obviously, Kvitova is the bigger hitter and the bigger risk-taker. But it's still going to be a hitting contest, isn't it?
Well, I kind of think of Kenin still as a fairly decent counterpuncher. I think she is a hitter, but she scurries and scraps. whereas Kvitova's a straight up. I mean, look, she can actually cover the court pretty well as well, can Kvitova. We saw that in that Wimbledon final against Eugenie Bouchard. But I think that Kvitova is the closest thing in terms of it's handled differently, but in terms of putting disappointment of a shot missed behind her, she's similar to Nadal in terms of ability to miss and then focus
and
on
so,
what's next.
And that's so key for her because she is going to miss the way she plays. She has to have that acceptance. Otherwise, she would just get so frustrated all the time. I think that's right, yeah.
It's like a self-awareness of her game, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's she forgives herself immediately. She just says, okay, that's okay. That's fine. Right, now where's the other ball? Right, I'm going to destroy this one instead. And I just feel that the potential for the matchup in the semifinals is a really exciting one.
Mm. Kvitova was very, very good today against Laura Siegmund. I mean, it was kind of a mismatch in terms of level, but given the roof was off, I found that really interesting to see. I mean, we've kind of been caveating all of our praise of Kvitova's performances that we've seen throughout this fortnight with, I think, most of what we've seen. She's been playing in indoor conditions, which we know she loves. So seeing her today playing very much outdoor and really hitting big and swinging freely and it all coming together was quite formidable, really. Her serve was such a potent weapon today.
Yeah. Did strike me what a good draw that was today, though. And I don't mean to be disrespectful to Laura Siegmund, but she's 66 in the world and she's never reached the second week of a slam before, despite having been on the tour for a number of years. And she had a few moments, but her game worked nicely for Kvitova. And apart from Kvitova's level, I think the bit I'll remember most was the time violation that Siegmund received from umpire Mariana Veljevic. Matt, you saw that, didn't you?
Yeah, I find time violations not that interesting. Is that a fair thing to say? I mean, I know it.
Come on, that one was
David looks like he's going to pee his pants with excitement about talking about this.
I know it was...
Don't rain on his parade.
I know it was noteworthy and right to bring up in the context of the match, but I just find it all a little bit silly. The fact that they argue
people
so
do
much
get het
about
up, don't they?
Yeah. A second or so. I mean, I think Siegmund was thinking that the umpire should have been more lenient or use more discretion because she was kind of about to throw the ball up when the clock hit zero. And yet you get so many other cases where people think, oh, well, the umpire should just, as soon as it gets to zero, they should call it.
Which one do you think?
I think the latter. I think if you're going to have the clock there, you stick to the clock. So I didn't have much sympathy with her, to be honest.
What I loved about it, and I would love it, I'd like the photograph, the freeze frame of this. I particularly enjoyed the kind of passive aggressive aggro of Siegmund dramatically holding her position mid serve when she's being called for a time violation with her throwing hand in the air for the ball toss and refusing to take it down while she had it out with the umpire. And she's just saying, my hand is here. I'm halfway through the toss. And they're having this out and they're discussing it. She's not moving from the baseline. She's not going to go over to her. She's having this discussion at long distance, social distance. And then at the end, they finish it and she's about to go back. And she goes, so are you giving me a time violation? And Veljevic goes, yes. I just liked the tension. It was wonderful.
Yeah, she was never not giving her a time violation.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. It's like when footballers argue about a red card or whatever. He's not going to change his mind. It was a nice moment of aggro in an otherwise slightly lifeless match, I agree. But I don't know. Overall, I just find arguments about time violations a bit silly. I just think someone like Petra Kvitova, as you said, kind of like she just puts unforced errors behind. If she got one, she would just say, oh, okay, and just play the next point. And I kind of prefer that.
Apparently, it's our anniversary of our match tomorrow, Matt, and I do remember you took a lot of time, and if the old countdown had been on, I think you'd have been over a couple of times.
So it's the man that took about 3.5 minutes to remove his trousers. What are you doing? It was Grigor Dimitrov-esque.
Can you explain that? Because that was I had the warm-up in the tracksuit bottoms, and then I thought I'd better take them off.
Yeah, you thought I'd better look like I mean business.
Yet. Yeah, that's right. Then
and you were having a strop because you'd had this 5-minute warm-up where you'd realised that Matt had a backhand like Marcelo Rios, and you stomped over to the chair.
I'd realised Matt was in a completely different league than me, plus 25 years younger. Not a great cocktail for success.
You thought, I'll take my trousers off and it'll all be better. Suddenly I'll be Pete Sampras.
Yeah, it didn't quite happen. But I had an injury, so, I mean, the rematch is going to be awesome.
Makes me really sad that was a year ago. When will our rematch be?
When Matt's not feeling too good.
I mean, that wasn't the angle I was going for, but sure.
I've been under the impression all this time that I caused the injury, David. So I'm actually, I feel like this is a new, I don't know, a new layer to this match.
I went into the match with an injury and it got worse during.
Okay, because I've been feeling...
David had to seek treatment.
I was feeling semi-bad for about a few months when you were saying, oh, my back's not been the same since we played, Matt.
Yeah. Well, you should have been. I mean, I mean, we were playing on a surface that I didn't want. And,
no, AstroTurf is not a legitimate surface.
Matt didn't want it either.
Well, I mean, you know.
There were quite a few questions on the Instagram Q&A about... one question was if someone had to play Solihull Simon in a match for your life, who would you send in, David or Matt?
I've developed a bit of a winning
and I thought my I instinctively Simon. Thought well obviously Matt because he's a better tennis player, but then I thought David would Nadal like just give it everything and embarrass himself out there if required.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that pressure.
Correct.
I would choke. Go with David.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not. Do you go with the?
I become ten.
Do you
times
go
the
with
player.
The better tennis player or the person that's prepared to? Well, you know,
I'm the guy who shoulder charged Diego Maradona off the ball for his country.
I mean, not literally, right?
Yeah, literally.
Huh?
What?
When I played five-a-side football against Diego Maradona in 2005.
What?
I inadvertently set David up for the... Well, I was going to say for the world's biggest name drop, but actually the world's biggest name drop since David Law talked about hitting with Roger Federer on Five Live yesterday.
Well, that wasn't my fault though, was it?
Well, it was a little bit your fault.
You brought the subject up.
You've got to tell us your
what happened.
Diego Maradona story now, David. Make it quick. Come on.
No, it's all right. I'm sure there'll be a better time than this. Come on.
There is nobody listening that's not thinking, for goodness sake, just tell that story quickly, David.
There's nobody listening. all right. Okay. So I'm at a Champions Tour event in Croatia in 2005, and Goran Ivanišević is there and Thomas Muster's there and Boris Becker is unable to play, so he has to be the referee because he's got an injury. And the Diego Maradona is in Croatia, arguably the greatest footballer of all time, doing a tour of Croatia and various other countries. And they decide to lay over the top of the clay court that they've been having this Champions Tour event a five-a-side football pitch. So they pit the teams, and I'm just the communication manager. I'm nothing to do with this. Somebody gets injured. And then somebody says, here you go, and threw me a shirt. And I was on the bench for Zvonimir Boban's team. And Boban played for AC Milan. So I'm in his team. So anyway, I'm just on the bench. That's fine. The match is going on. Goran Ivanišević is playing. And Davor Šuker, who scored in the World Cup 1998, is playing up front for the other team. And about 10 minutes in, somebody pulls a hamstring and I get sent on. And I really don't know what I'm supposed to do because I haven't played football in many years. I'll go in defence, right? And I'm in defence and I'm marking Diego Maradona. Diego Maradona. And little did I know that they'd had a team meeting before the match to explain that Maradona, because he had recently been in hospital in a pretty bad way and couldn't really run, that he would just stay in the centre circle and everybody would bounce the ball off him and make him look good. I didn't know that.
I can see where this is going.
So when the ball gets played up to him, I mean, I just do what anybody would do. I just go in there and I let him know I'm there, put it that way.
I'm currently Googling and, stories for whether Diego Maradona was hospitalised in 2005 in Croatia.
Well, I bundled him over, put it that way, onto the floor.
And he went down. He went fully down.
Yeah, he went down. There are 6,000 people in the crowd.
Thinking, who's this giraffe?
And they're all booing me. They're all booing me. So, I mean, it was there to be won.
Did you win the ball?
I thought I won the ball.
Did the referee think you won the ball?
On the ground.
Was Boris Becker the referee?
Yes. I mean, the free kick was given. So anyway, this happens. And I mean, I haven't played football in several years, but I'm trying to stay out of the way. And then suddenly Zvonimir Boban gets the ball on our team. I'm like, nobody's going down the wing. I'm going to go down the wing. So I go pelting down the wing and I'm like, Boban! over here. And Boban plays the most perfectly weighted pass you've ever seen into my path. And I'm one-on-one with the keeper. And I play the ball through the legs of the keeper as he's coming out and I score. And the crowd boo because I'm the person who's knocked over Diego Maradona. And then at the end, it's surprisingly in this exhibition match, it ends 5-5. And it's a penalty shootout.
Oh, no.
And again, I'm deliberately staying out of the way because I really hope and I really would rather not have a penalty. But
I was going to say, surely in five aside, everyone has to take one.
Yeah. Well, you know, it turns out everybody has a penalty and I'm one of the penalty takers. And when I make my way forward, again, the crowd starts to boo. And it's just this long walk while I'm getting booed by the entire place. So I put my hand to my ear and suggest that they boo louder.
Daniil Medvedev style.
Boo louder. Yeah, Daniil Medvedev style. You'd have been so proud, Catherine. This was 2 years before you met me. And I didn't really have a plan for my penalty, to be quite honest. So I just hit the living daylights out of it, and it went into the roof of the net. And I scored, and I got booed again.
It sounds like an all-time great performance, David.
You asked.
We've made 6 months of podcasts with no tennis, David, and this story has never come up. We've been filling time for months.
Have you never heard that story before?
Never.
Never.
I've known you for 13 years.
I've got the photo somewhere.
Yeah, we'll be seeing that, please, as a matter of priority. Matt, have you got a story that can follow that? Anyone?
I'd quite like to know if David's team won.
I don't really remember who won.
You just remember your parts in the match.
I mean, obviously. Obviously, I remember.
David texted the group and said, Danielle Collins has won all 6 sets she's played against Sophia Kenin. And I said, yeah, we discussed that at some length on the podcast last night. And Matt was typing, yeah, I said that on the podcast. And David had just sort of blanked out all the bits that weren't him talking, seemingly.
Making me sound terrible.
Well, terrible, but also a bloke that scored against Diego Maradona. So, you know, swings and roundabouts.
I think the other team won. I think
you'd have remembered it if you'd won.
Yeah, probably.
Mm.
So that's about 10 minutes wasted that we can probably edit out.
It's disappointing that we have to get back to the tennis now, somehow. But alas, we probably ought to.
I'm going to have to drink this whiskey again. It's great.
I'm desperately searching for a segue from that to Stefanos Tsitsipas. I don't have one.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, tennis podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Stefanos Tsitsipas was blooming great today. 7-5, 6-2, 6-3 over Andrei Rublev, who led 5... He certainly had 5-3. Did he have 5-2 in the opening set?
He had... Was it 5-3? 5-3.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, because at that point, I made the other very well-observed point that Tsitsipas just can't find a way through Rublev, at which point he then wins 4 games in a row and wins the set. But, I mean, seriously, I mean, toe-to-toe for the first 8 games, Rublev was metronomic in consistency and powerful, and Tsitsipas looked like he just... I mean, he wasn't playing badly at all, but he couldn't figure it out. And then Rublev really did blink at 5-3, didn't he, serving for that set? He blew it, to be honest, and Tsitsipas simultaneously just grew.
Yeah, it was like two completely different matches. The first 8 games, as David said, Rublev was dictating all the rallies. He's got this incredibly relentless, sustained attack that he's capable of coming up with from the back of the court off both wings. He's got such pace, but especially that forehand, he was really directing it and targeting the Tsitsipas backhand, I thought. And yeah, I mean, Tsitsipas couldn't find ways through him. But then once Rublev blinked, trying to serve out the set, and it was a case of that, he just made a game of errors, basically, when he went to serve it out. Tsitsipas then quite obviously changed his tactics and started using the slice and bringing Rublev in and just changing the rallies. And that kind of matches up with what he said afterwards, where he said, I engaged my brain and worked out the conundrum I had in front of me or something, which didn't exactly sound like he was playing a tennis match. It's like he was doing some kind of puzzle or something. But maybe that's an insight into how he sees tennis as this big puzzle to work out. And I think that kind of fits with the way he plays. He is a thinker on the court. And those last two sets, he was magnificent. He was playing the match on his terms, and just see how clay court tennis really suits him, because I think his return of serve has been quite exposed at times in his career, and he's got so much more time to hit that, and he can open up the court with wonderful angles, play aggressive but kind of safe aggressive. And he was absolutely fantastic in those last two sets, and he's now won 15 sets in a row after being 2 sets to love down in the first round. And I think that's the most sets in a row he's ever won in his career. He's on this really, really strong streak now of just dominating his opponents, and it's gonna serve him well, because I was worried about his energy levels in this tournament, but he seems fine on that front.
And saying what he did there and doing what he did from 5-3 in the first set, it was almost like rubbing salt in the wound for Andrei Rublev, wasn't it? Because he was doing and then explaining doing the exact thing that Andrei Rublev can't do. He can do this one thing extremely well, and I love watching it. I love his shot making. I love his ninja style stroke production, and it can be so explosive and so dynamic to watch. But there, he doesn't have other ways to win points. He is, I'm slightly reluctant to say one-dimensional, because that comes with connotations. But
he's plan A.
It's plan A. Absolutely. There is no versatility or adaptability in there. And that is, I mean, okay, brilliant tennis in the end won Stefanos Tsitsipas the match. But in order to change it round, to take control of the match so he could play that brilliant tennis, it was the versatility and the thinking on his feet and the having options available that won him the match. And even if Rublev had that thought process, he didn't have the same weapons to deploy that Tsitsipas did. And I wonder if he will he just accept this is the kind of player I am, or will he try and diversify his game? I'm quite interested to see which way that goes for Rublev.
Yeah, because I think if I were to go back 10, 12 years, I'd have probably put Novak Djokovic in a similar boat, really, in terms of I would have thought he was one-dimensional. And he's showed that he's got more to it than that, you know, as the years have gone on. And I don't think it's necessarily that he just had it. He's developed it. So can Rublev develop it? I'd be surprised, personally. I think he can be incredibly successful with what he has got, because I think if he hadn't lost his nerve a little bit today, he could very easily have won that first set. And then it's a different feel to the match, totally, because he just faded. And most of that was, I mean, apart from his own wobble, that was brought about by Tsitsipas just putting the ball in so many difficult positions. And once you identified, Matt, when we were talking about it, how he started to invoke his slice, but not just as a rallying shot, as a way to bring him forward. Mm-hmm. And it's classic Federer. It's classic Federer, isn't it? Federer chips that thing short, brings you in, and then he's either got a passing shot option, or as Tsitsipas was doing a lot today, with his incredible athleticism and wingspan, going in himself and volleying the ball past the guy who's at the net. I mean, I look at clay as the perfect canvas for Tsitsipas to show his full array of ground strokes and options, because he can paint pictures on it in a way that maybe that he certainly can't do on grass at the moment. And I mean, it'll be fascinating to see if he conquers grass, but I love watching him on clay.
Yeah, I think that match he played against Wawrinka last year has slightly masked in my mind just how good of a clay court player Tsitsipas is. Not because that wasn't a great match, but because it was reasonably early in the tournament. I mean, it was the quality of a semi-final or even a final, but because he didn't go that far, I've thought, oh, well, he hasn't had brilliant results at Roland Garros ever. I know he's obviously very early into his career as well, but you know, he's beaten Nadal on the clay court. David seems to be going for a third whiskey.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do this.
We went in all sorts of directions after two. I'm anxious about the remaining 20 minutes.
Just keep talking, Matt. Keep talking.
But yeah, I agree. Clay is Tsitsipas's best surface, I think, at the moment, and we're seeing that. And I think Rublev Tsitsipas is such a watchable match, their contrast of styles. And I think clay really suits Tsitsipas at the moment. I know Rublev won in Hamburg, but Tsitsipas should have won that. I think on hard courts, they'll be more even.
What level of weird did we experience in Tsitsipas's post-match on-court interview today?
Not that weird, actually. He was really great. I didn't think the questions were particularly great, but he made them very quotable. He started talking about how much he loves the French Open that he used to miss classes at school to watch the tournament.
That was lovely, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He interrupted the interviewer to say, hey, I've got something to tell you all. I used to play truant so I could come to Roland Garros.
Did he use that expression? No.
I mean, I used to miss classes in order so I could see Roland Garros, is what he said. Mm.
He's you, David, repeating his A-levels.
Correct. It's just that one of us is a world-renowned tennis player and one of us is a...
drinking whiskey, in a Holiday Inn in Salford.
On a Zoom chat.
Yeah, I mean... yeah, it was. It was really charming, wasn't it? I mean, it had a generally quite weird vibe about it, I think, yeah, because of the questions. And I do cut some slack for that because he's a quirky guy to interview, isn't he? But he was his best self, I thought, in that interview. And yeah, he is so charming, isn't he?
I think he is. I think he's lovely. I don't know Stefanos Tsitsipas at all, but I just...
Does anyone?
I love the fact that he doesn't... well, probably not. Mm. I love the fact that he just... He doesn't worry about how it's coming across in a kind of cool way. It's not about that. He hasn't got some pre-programmed line that he delivers because he's doing a post-match interview. Just whatever comes, comes. And it's... I find him... lovely, I really do.
Yeah, can you imagine being 21 and not caring what people think of you? I mean, cannot relate in any way, but how incredible.
And actually, I quite like the fact that after being a bit of a so-and-so to him, Nick Kyrgios eventually just kind of thought, actually, you know what? He's all right. I quite like him. And I'm pleased that that happened.
The Nick Kyrgios seal of approval that everyone is craving.
It has ruined Tsitsipas' doubles, though, hasn't it? Ever
yes,
since he played
has.
With him. I don't even think he's won a doubles match since he played with Kyrgios.
Since Stefanik was born. The curse of the nickname. So Stefanos Tsitsipas will play in the semi-final and will be fresh for, and that could be crucial if he is to have a chance. The fact that he got the job done today in three pretty straightforward sets, he will play the world number one Novak Djokovic, who I don't know how to sum up the match that he played against Pablo Carreño Busta this evening. Four sets. Pablo Carreño Busta won the first. It was immediately obvious that this wasn't going to be a straightforward tennis match. Djokovic came onto court wearing some kinesio tape up the nape of his neck. The manifestation of that injury was most obvious in both the power and the consistency of his serve, which was very much off, and he was shaking out his racket arm rather a lot, wasn't he? And Carreño Busta did end up taking that opening set, and probably should have taken more sets, I would say, given the state that Djokovic was in tonight, which to my mind was pretty subpar, actually. There were periods when he looked better, and actually I almost think that Carreño Busta played better in those periods. He really made, sort of, they matched him, and because he is such a counter-punching tennis player, he almost needed Djokovic to play better for himself to play better. But I don't quite know what to make of it all. I think a different opponent, somebody with a bit more of an intimidating presence or an ability to impose themselves on a match might have done more than taken a set tonight against Djokovic. And his resilience, Djokovic, and his ability to power through things and turn the negative into his own positive is mesmerizing. But in kind of tennis terms, I don't quite know what to make of what we've seen tonight, whether it's just as sort of one of those weird tennis matches and you're going to see the normal Djokovic step out against Tsitsipas. I don't know. What do you think, Matt?
Well, I think Pablo Carreño Busta played well, and I think he is quite a difficult opponent for Djokovic in the way that Bautista Agut has been. I think there's something about counterpunctures and Djokovic having to create a lot of the pace himself and someone who he knows can match him in rallies that does slightly frustrate Djokovic and make it difficult for him. I think Karenia Busta's discipline and steadiness in rallies is not a quality that Djokovic enjoys particularly. But then I agree with you that the sort of extra elements that Karenia Busta needed to take advantage of a below par Djokovic, he didn't quite have. He strikes me as a player who's going to probably most of the time push Djokovic, but never really beat him because he doesn't have the weapons or the extra dimension to his game in a way that Tsitsipas, I think, does. So that will be interesting in the semifinals if Djokovic plays like this. He was certainly bothered and hampered, I think, in that first set. He said it's some kind of neck or shoulder issue that he's dealing with. And he also said that it loosened up as the match went on. And I thought that was apparent as well. He did start serving better and start swinging more freely from the back of the court in that fourth set, especially, I thought. But where this leaves Djokovic in the tournament in terms of whether it makes me think he's more likely to win the title, less likely to win the title, or the same, I'm kind of left thinking the same. I don't feel like, although it was a match with a lot going on, I don't feel like I learnt a lot. I'm not sure there were many conclusions you could draw from this match because you're wondering whether this is a one-off for him, this problem that he's got, or whether he's going to carry it into future matches. And we won't know the answer to that until he plays Tsitsipas. But what's for certain, as you said, is his ability to come through when he is having problems is unmatched, I think, really. We've seen it so many times. It's why I wasn't panicking for him. I believed him that he was bothered and hampered by something, but it didn't make me think, oh, he's going to lose this match, because so often he has an ability to ride through it and come through. So just an interesting match that kind of leaves more questions than answers, I think, for me anyway.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think he probably came onto the court with some stress tonight, partly because of whatever's bothering him physically. And we saw some TV shots of him getting treatment in his practice session earlier in the day by his physio or his fitness trainer. I mean, it looked horrible what was happening to him. He was the physio was digging his knuckles into Djokovic's neck, right where that tape was, underneath the back of his head. And I mean, it was really looked horribly uncomfortable. It's, I suppose, the sort of thing that a chiropractor might do or someone like that. And there was clearly an issue. And all the way through that first set, Djokovic was manipulating that left bicep of his. Sometimes he was thumping it with his other fist. Other times he was sort of putting his thumb into it. And there were occasions where he was moving the upper part of his torso around in a way that I think might be trying to loosen himself up for his two-handed backhand. He was really uncomfortable all the way through that first set and probably first set and a half, I would say, physically. He didn't look right and he looked stressed about whatever it was. He looked red in the face, he looked anxious, and I thought he was under real pressure there because he was a breakdown, he broke back, then Karina Buster won the set and was playing very nicely. And where it reminded me of the US Open match, obviously we had that extreme situation of him hitting the balls away. We didn't have that tonight. But back then, I tuned into that match at 5-all because of Karina Buster's ability to just stay with him, to rally with him, to kind of at least push him into the darker waters of a match, of a set. And that's what he did that day. And then we know what happened next with him hitting the ball and he ended up getting defaulted. This time he was in those waters again in a slightly different way. And I thought his response was actually really impressive form-wise, that he found the form that he'd found in the earlier rounds to turn that match on its head. And because Karina Busta only had a few bailout shots where he just kind of lost his mind and slapped away. And the rest of the time he was digging in, Djokovic was just too good for him. But all the way through the match, Djokovic was turning around, screaming at the top of his lungs at his support team and his box. I don't really know what about, whether it was just frustration about his physical situation or the tactics not working or whatever it was. But it was a mental battle out there for Djokovic tonight. I don't know how bad he is physically. There's something up. And my mind does go back to the US Open of 2019, where he withdrew against Stan Wawrinka after two and a bit sets, when all the way through we'd had a narrative of him struggling, rumours that he's struggling in practice physically, that there's an issue, and each match he was getting through it, and then suddenly he hit the wall really against Wawrinka. I mean, he's come in as Wimbledon champion, etc., and he lost that match. And that's the one thing I have a question mark over for the next match against Tsitsipas, who is playing pretty much the tennis of his life right now. And if you put them both at their very best, Djokovic will win. But I'm not sure physically that he will be at his best in that match, given what I've seen tonight. We'll have to wait and see. But I think that Tsitsipas has got the physicality to put that into question and to push him into those deep waters again. And I'm very interested to find that out. Incidentally, Corinna Buster, I'm just reading some quotes here from ESPN Tennis, translated from Spanish. And they say, Corinna Buster has said, every time the game gets complicated, he asks for medical assistance. He's been doing this for a long time. I already knew it. I knew that would happen at the US Open and what would happen here and what will continue to happen. Which, you know, those are pretty strong quotes. And he did have a medical timeout. He did have some, or at least some assistance on the court. Lots and lots of players do. Lots and lots of people have an opinion of players that do have timeouts and have opinions on Djokovic and et cetera. I mean, it seemed to me that once he had loosened up physically, whether that's just physical or whether it's the stress, I don't know. He was a different player. So it'll be very interesting to see how he goes in the semifinals, because we definitely saw something tonight that we haven't seen all tournament long from Djokovic, both mentally and physically.
Mm. So Tsitsipas against Djokovic then, David.
Yeah. Looking forward to that massively. I think it's 3-2 in the favour of Djokovic as a head-to-head. But that tells its own story, because I just love watching Tsitsipas' ability to threaten physically and with his strokes. And I think that could be an absolute belter.
It's very interesting him going into a match with a non-Big 3, Big 4 player with a fairly even head-to-head, isn't it?
Mm.
Certainly against a next-gen player. It's been a while since I've said next-gen, or anyone said next-gen.
Next gen doesn't feel like
no.
a thing anymore.
And I felt really weird rolling off my tongue then. Is it ceased to be a thing? I think the next gen finals are still happening.
Yeah, well, he was asked about it, Tsitsipas, in his press conference, and he said, I'm not next gen anymore. I'm a proper adult.
Oh, that's like, you know, on your seventh birthday when you think, oh, I'm a grown up now. Oh.
Next gen finals is off, by the way.
Oh, is it? But only because of COVID, not because next gen isn't a thing anymore.
No, absolutely right. But do you know what? When they listed today on the graphics on the screen, the highest ranked players of 24 and under is how they ranked them. And Medvedev still fits into that bracket. But all the other players were 21, 22, 24. There were no 19-year-olds in that list.
Was there not Jannik Sinner?
No, I mean, because they were doing 24 and under, everybody was ahead of him. I mean, obviously, he's properly that bracket, but all the others feel like they've come through that, to me at least.
Mm.
I don't even know what the definition is anymore. But
I think it's 21, isn't it? 21 and
or
under?
Or the year of your 21st birthday. Yeah. So there have been some awkward years. Like, I remember Zverev qualified sort of when, you know, it felt like he hadn't been next gen for a couple of years, and it was just sort of an awkward thing, like, let's just pretend he hasn't qualified so we don't have to explain why he's not playing, because obviously he wasn't ever going to play.
But it's become a catch-all term for anyone that isn't the big four, really,
sort of,
who's certainly younger than that Raonic, Dimitrov, Goffin, Nishikori age group, kind of anyone that is younger than that and hasn't won a slam. It's kind of, we've all put them all in the next gen category.
They are the movement.
Exactly.
It's time for them to be players.
Be adults. It's time for them to be proper adults. Yeah.
I think he's put that perfectly now. That's like a veil that you could hide behind before, the next gen veil. Not anymore.
No, it's time to be gen. So it is women's semi-finals day tomorrow. I should say, by the way, whilst I'm still wrapping up today, that Iga Świątek won her doubles match with Nicole Melikar and is now a singles and doubles semi-finalist at this year's French Open.
Which not lost a set in either tournament.
Luminek. Wow. Her doubles semi-final will be on Friday, so she only has to play one tomorrow. But it does obviously mean that she won't have a day off. That's not hurt her so far, playing doubles in her rest time. And maybe she's doing a John McEnroe and playing doubles instead of practicing.
I wonder who, I don't know this. So I wonder who is the last player to win singles and doubles at a Grand Slam.
I know Matt knows.
Well, I think it might be Serena, who I think she might have won Wimbledon singles and doubles reasonably recently. But I think at the French Open, I heard that it was Mary Pierce, possibly.
Yes, I think Mary Pierce at the French.
Mm. Wow.
Mm. And the men's, no one's done it since Yevgeny Kafelnikov, have they? Also at the French.
That's right, yeah.
So the French is the place to do it, maybe. So Iga Świątek and Nadia Podoroska, they play first at 3 p.m. local time, 2 p.m. UK time tomorrow. And that is followed by Sofia Kenin against Petra Kvitova. What's happening in those matches? Hands up if anybody wants to make predictions.
Well, firstly, the women's semi-finals on the Philippe Chatrier Stadium.
Yes.
What a thing.
Who'd have thought it? Yeah, guaranteed to happen.
Really looking forward to them. I'm really pumped for these matches. I mean,
to talk about a time violation earlier, David. Is just generally pumped.
Yeah, you name it, I'm pumped. All right. no, but I mean, my main hope is that Podoroska can play uninhibited tennis again, because I read a stat that she's hit more winners than anybody in the draw so far.
Really? More than Świątek?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, obviously she's played a lot more games and so forth, but she plays an aggressive game. I mean, the way she took on Svitolina, it felt like she just, the status of Grand Slam quarterfinal was not a factor in her mind at all. Only in the last couple of points when she was trying to get over the line, I sensed it then. And Svitolina was making her play balls, you know, that were tricky under those circumstances. But she just goes for it, which I love. And I just hope she can play that sort of tennis tomorrow. And we'll see if Świątek can handle it.
Kenin and Kvitova, the battle of the former Grand Slam champions. What's happening there? Matt, you're left with this one.
I think Kvitova leads the head-to-head to Love. I was checking, but it feels a little bit like what we were saying at the US Open about Jennifer Brady head-to-heads. Kenin is such a different player now that they almost feel a little bit irrelevant. I think one of them was on clay, one of those matches that they've had in the past. But gosh, I mean, I'll be backing Kenin, I think, slightly. I just think she's so match tough, and I just think she's very difficult to put away. And I think maybe Kvitova hasn't really had, you know, a kind of real battle yet. I think she's through in straight sets, isn't she, all the way? So if it gets tight, which I suspect it will, Kenin's shown me a lot this tournament that she will handle those moments. But it also feels like it could slightly be on Petra Kvitova's racket in terms of, if she just hits a purple patch, is there anything anyone can do? So it's always difficult to predict her results, but I expect Kenin to kind of make it a bit of a fight and come through it.
Mm.
Yeah, I've got a Kenin Swiatek final. What have you got, Catherine?
Oh, I'm asking the questions.
Yeah, but I've turned it around now. Come on.
Yes, I think I do as well.
Me too.
It's also the men's double semi-finals tomorrow. Juan Sebastian Cabal, Robert Farah, the top seeds against Mateo Pavic and Bruno Suarez. And then the defending champions, Kevin Kravitz and Andreas Mies, the Germans, take on Wesley Kuhlhoff, former doubles partner of Stefanos Tsitsipas and Nikola Mektic. Kuhlhoff openly declared that he was sort of using Tsitsipas for his ranking, and then when he got his doubles ranking up high enough in his own right, sort of ditched him. Lovely bloke, though. So that's all tomorrow. That's on the Suzanne Longling court. The women's semis are on Philippe Chatrier. There is all sorts of wheelchair matches, quad wheelchair matches, junior matches as well happening elsewhere. So we'll start keeping you up to date and across all of that as well, because we have still got four more tennis podcasts to come from the 2020 French Open. I've got a minute left, and it's a very important minute because CAM content has come in. And it is, even by the standard of CAM content, which is just outrageously high, it is epic. I mean, it took me on an emotional journey, which I can't quite find words for. So we will be linking to it in all our forms of media. It's probably more worthy of your time than this podcast. It is that good.
I mean, definitely.
Yes, I think the highest compliment I can pay someone is that they have Mary Carrillo traits. And Steve and Cam have that in every time you think you've seen the best thing you can possibly get from them, they outdo themselves again and come up with something special. And this is special.
And Mary's a fan.
Yes.
Yeah. Watch the video. It's immense. Cam, we love you. Steve, we love you for making the Cam content. And we'll be back for another tennis podcast tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.